everyone. Thank you for joining us for another installment of the Aquila Group of Funds podcast. I'm your host, Matthew DiMaggio. Today, we are accompanied by Tony Tanner, Portfolio Manager of the Aquila Tax-Free Fund for Utah. Thanks for being here today, Tony.
Hey, good afternoon, Matt. Thank you for having me on today.
So, I want to touch on a big topic up front. The Fed decided to sit tight on short-term interest rates early this year. It seems the sentiment is kind of the same here in March now. What are you thinking about that, and is it affecting how you're managing the portfolio?
It's not having a large effect on how I'm managing the portfolio. You know, the managing of interest rates based on what the Fed is doing in short-term rates is really different from managing, you know, an intermediate or long-term portfolio for the long run. And so, you know, I'm paying close attention to how the inflation numbers are behaving. And, you know, it's my observation that since May or June of last year, inflation has been solidly under 4%. And so although the Fed's timing for interest rate cuts may be pushed out, it seems that we're still at the peak of the interest rate cycle. And the downdraft we had in prices and the increase in yields we saw back in October, from which we've rallied, kind of show a demarcation where, you know, as time marches on with any, you know, slowdown in the economy or hints of the Fed becoming more dovish, you know, we expect to see rates begin to continue and moderately recede. And so, you know, we're focused on, you know, positioning the fund for generating, you know, long-term attractive levels of income and, you know, staying within that intermediate range.
Great answer, Tony. And as always, there's just a lot more going on than just meets the eye. So thank you for that. So I want to touch on an important topic for municipal investors, which is the municipal to treasury ratio. It's been below average for some time here. It seems that the only part of the ratios, or the curve rather, is at the long end. What's your take on that, and what's it going to take to see a big change there?
Well, yeah, the interesting thing about yield ratios and the yield curve are just the shape of the yield curve right now. And this has been going on since, you know, 2022, and that's this unusual bowl shape in the yield curve. And if I'm looking at high-quality AAA yield indexes today, you know, especially that 5 to 10-year part of the curve where yields are 2.5% or less, it's a very different place from the long end of the curve, out 15 years or longer, where you're solidly above 3 or, you know, closer to those one-year levels. And, you know, muni treasury ratios are, to me, sometimes less a guide for what to do than what not to do. And the shape of the yield curve suggests that, you know, being broadly diversified across the curve, which means maybe having a longer duration or longer maturity consideration than one might think, given the focus on the Fed, I think would be prudent. I think that you're right that the long end of the bond curve is somewhat cheaper, you know, in the low to mid 80s, and not as cheap as it used to be. But again, if you have put this in the context of long run inflation and inflation expectations, where we're solidly in the threes, we're a long way from the 6, 7, 8% inflation we were suffering in 2022. And the truth is, you know, 3% isn't that much further from the Fed's 2% target. And so, I do think that while ratios might seem expensive, I think they're expensive against a benchmark that's considerably cheap compared to the level of inflation, and provide some opportunity to generate real yields, or an opportunity to generate yields that'll compensate you for the rate of inflation and the trend in the inflation rate. And that's really important for income-oriented investors that are evaluating their overall asset allocations.
And that's exactly the take I was looking for. Great, Tony. It's my observation that since the bottom of the market a few years ago, we haven't really seen a confident municipal market. Do you agree with that, and is that the same observation you're making?
I think we've seen a muni market that's developing some growing conviction. I think that if you look at the this cycle of interest rates and the current Fed tightening cycle, you know, one of the things I want to point out is if you go back to mid-May of 2022, which is when 10-year high-quality municipal bond yields first approached 3%. And at the time, the Fed funds rate had only been increased to about 1 or 1.5% at that time. Well, in the convening 21 months, the municipal bond market, in particular the high-quality intermediate municipal bond market, has been in positive total return territory 90% of the time, even with the retrenchment of yields to the cyclical highs back in the past October. And over that 21-month period, for the most part, prices are relatively unchanged, and most of the return has come from income. And so it's been a decidedly normal income and return environment for municipal bonds, you know, investable yields in the 3% range with some fluctuation up or down 3 or 4%. And so I'm hoping that, you know, investors will begin to notice and pick up on, you know, that sort of normalization of the behavior of the market, because, you know, we're 400 basis points higher in Fed funds in that time. And a focus on what the Fed is saying and doing has really been a distraction to investors and advisors from the risk and return attributes that have grown much more positive over the past 20 months or so.
So we've observed this year supply levels that are a little bit elevated year over year. Obviously, we're still very early on in the year here. What's it going to take to pop in 2024, and will the demand side be able to support it?
Well, you know, Matt, you know, the two primary things that will drive issuance and tend to drive issuance are, you know, obviously lower interest rates and more attractive borrowing costs. We may see that as the year progresses if we do get some easing in Fed policy. The other is, of course, you know, state budgets and the need to borrow for capital expenditures. And, you know, we're a few years removed from the tremendous COVID stimulus packages of 2020 and 2021. And many municipal towns and governments and entities receive significant infusions of cash, some of which they are still working off. And, you know, as that starts to wind down, you're going to see a greater return to traditional municipal finance for capital projects and other ongoing investment needs in communities. Yes, this year we've seen a small increase of about 20% on an absolute basis. It's not a lot in dollars. You know, but in 2023, you know, the decline in issuance was only about 3%. And the truth is, for us as active portfolio managers, you know, canvassing the secondary market is really a primary driver of opportunities for active portfolio management. You know, the muni market is trades on a trade by appointment basis, because only 2% of it ever trades daily. And so, you know, consistently canvassing the dealer community to share, you know, what you're looking for in managing the fund is really important to sourcing and unearthing opportunities to actively manage the fund. And so supply can help, you know, if you get a spike in issuance. And last year in Utah, we didn't see a very large decline in issuance. And this year, I think we're up 20%. Year to date. And so overall, Utah issuance has been very sufficient for us in actively managing the fund and optimally situating the fund.
I'm glad you touched on Utah, Tony. It's worth noting that supply is usually documented on a national level, but that doesn't necessarily mean it trickles down evenly to each state. Can you talk about how Utah is looking for supply so far this year?
Well, so far, Utah for supply and for issuance is looking very attractive and good for us as active portfolio managers. You know, issuance is up about 20% this year, and the state typically ranks, you know, 26th or 7th in the nation in issuance. It's sort of a mid-size amount, but we've seen some good breadth across revenue and geo bond issuers and the rating spectrum of investment grade issuers. You know, and that really reflects one of the advantages of managing in Utah, because the breadth of issuers is really strong. Although the state itself is a natural AAA-rated state, there are a wide variety of issuers that issue bonds in the AA and single-A-rated categories. And that's important for portfolio managers. They have the chance to build genuinely economically diverse portfolios. And somewhat different than we see in some of the other states we manage, like Arizona, where there's a much lower preponderance of A-rated issuers. And so we think the issuance and supply backdrop is actually very favorable right now, and we expect it to continue to be in throughout the year.
Great, Tony. Let's continue to talk about Utah. Is there anything else happening in state and local landscape that's worth mentioning?
Well, I think it's important to look at Utah from the standpoint of it's a very compact and resilient and almost self-contained economy. It's always historically had an unemployment rate that's below the national average, and while the unemployment rate has creeped up from 2.4 to 2.8% in the last half of 2023, we're not finding that worrisome, partly because outside of the pandemic-generated employment shocks, unemployment in the state of Utah has been at or below 3% since early 2018. And so Utah's workforce tends to be young. The state's got a very high labor participation rate. And so it's really somewhat insulated from the vagaries of the much broader national economic cycle. So you combine that with the breadth and diversity of the economy, and it is really a wonderful economy in which to operate. The one other thing I think that's noticeable is that with the population growth that it's experienced over the last 20 years, it's moved up the rankings among states and is now what used to be a small state is now a solidly mid-sized state with a very diverse economy. And it's not just the population growth. Like Arizona, Utah has become a magnet for wealth. And one of the interesting things that I saw in a 2016 to 2021 study of shifts in adjusted gross income and tax filers among the states, Utah has attracted some of the wealthiest tax filers in the nation. Over that five-year period, it attracted a net 30,000 tax filers with a combined adjusted gross income of $5.5 billion. That's an average adjusted gross income of almost $180,000. So those types of larger demographic trends are really supportive to the economy, and we're seeing economic development initiatives around important developments in downtown Salt Lake City like the Power District, and longer term, the state of Utah and Salt Lake City in particular are entering the conversation for pro sports expansion. So it's a really dynamic economy that has a lot of momentum right now.
So I want to close out our last question here by speaking about the fund itself, of course, the Ecola Tax-Free Fund for Utah. Could you tell us about the current positioning of the fund and how you're managing in this environment?
Sure. And since we have transitioned the portfolio management team following J.T. Thompson's recent retirement and the fantastic 14-year tenure he had in shepherding the fund, we've been focusing on adding incremental value. And one of the interesting things we've been able to do is, despite the increase in the fund's net asset value since the beginning of October and the overall increase in bond prices, we've actually generated a slight increase in the fund's distributable yield by conducting bond swaps that have enhanced the fund's level of income. And so we've been able to add some good incremental value to the fund. Where it's currently positioned, is solidly in the intermediate and high quality area. About 75% of the portfolio is within the 5 to 15 year maturity range, which has performed well, but has become somewhat expensive. And so we're looking for opportunities to allocate to longer maturities and longer dated maturities that will help continue to support the fund's income. The fund is pretty conservatively positioned with an effective duration of around 4.1 years and a final maturity of around 9.5 years. So very good risk and return value with the level of income we're getting. Again, very high quality, over 76% AA rated. More of a tilt toward revenue bonds at 90%. That's more a function of the nature of the breadth of issuance we see in the state. And so moving forward, we would expect to, again, look for some of those high-quality issuers in the general obligation space where we're finding the yield ratios to be still be very attractive, being north of 80%. And that'll just kind of continue to be the focus of incremental value that capitalizes on the breadth of the state's inherent economic diversity.
That sums our podcast up for today. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And as always, thanks again for joining us, Tony.
Thank you again for having me, Matt.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. The opinions shared are those of the portfolio managers and do not necessarily reflect those of the investment advisor of the fund. The fund seeks to provide a high level of income exempt from state and federal income tax, as is consistent with capital preservation. Past performance does not guarantee future results. For certain investors, some dividends may be subject to federal and state income taxes, including the alternative minimum tax, referred to as AMT. Please consult your tax professional. Independent rating services such as Standard & Poor's, Moody's, and Fitch assign ratings which generally range from AAA, AAA, highest, to D, lowest, to indicate the creditworthiness of underlying bonds in the portfolio. Where the independent rating services differ in the rating assigned to an issue or do not provide a rating for an issue, the highest available rating is used in calculating allocations by rating. Pre-refunded or escrowed bonds are issued to retire or regain an outstanding bond issue at a specific call date. Until the call date, the proceeds of the bond issuance are typically placed in a trust and invested in U.S. Treasury bonds or state and local government securities. Modified and effective duration both measure the value of a security in response to a change in interest rates. Effective duration also takes into account the effect of embedded options. The weighted average life, also referred to as weighted average maturity, is a reflection of the quickness with which the principal of an issue is expected to be paid. Yield refers to the earnings generated and realized on an investment over a specific period. Yield is expressed as a percentage based on the invested amount, current market value, or face value of the security, and includes the interest earned or dividends received from holding a particular security. The yield ratio represents the comparison of the expected yield of one bond to the expected yield of another. A yield ratio is important when deciding whether to invest in one bond or another. Generally, the higher yield is considered better. Mutual fund investing involves risk. Loss of principal is possible. Investments in bonds may decline in value due to rising interest rates, a real or perceived decline in credit quality of the issuer, borrower, counterparty, or collateral, adverse tax or legislative changes, court decisions, market or economic conditions. Fund performance could be more volatile than that of the funds with greater geographic diversification. Before investing in a fund, carefully read about and consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and other information found in the fund prospectus. The prospectus is available from your financial advisor when you visit www.aquilafunds.com or call 800-437-1020.